Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Hi, Todd Feinberg here. After 6, let's talk to Brent McCall. You know Brent. He's one of the prisoners we have on regularly. Some people don't like that I have prisoners on so much, but I love that I have them on. One, because any voice we can get on the air that you don't regularly have access to, I think, is an advantage for you. And second, they are living in the government's womb, I guess. And that gives them, I mean, who else has their whole lives controlled by the government, literally every second of the day, but a prisoner? And therefore, who gives us a better gateway into understanding fully just how corrupt and detrimental to the health of everybody within its reach government is? So Brent is here. Thank you, sir, for joining us once again. And Brent wants to talk to us about, we had a congressional candidate on the other day, Justin Anderson, who is a former prison guard and made some comments about prison in response to my questions that Brent wants to respond to. So what was it that you heard that bothered you, Brent, or made you want to comment?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, Todd. Ultimately, he claimed that he had 20 years working in a maximum security prison, and I think that when he pointed that out, your antenna went up, and you sort of went down a little rabbit hole and talked to him about what he would change about the system. What, like, one thing would he tweak in order to get better results? And I was struck by his answer because it seemed so emblematic of the problem with corrections personnel. I mean, after 20 years in prison, he basically, and I'm paraphrasing here, said nothing can be done. His position boiled down to criminals eventually age out of crime. And that seems to me a remarkably irresponsible position for anybody who's in the Department of Correction, but let alone who did 20 years in the system. It's demonstrative, I think, of a massive amount of ignorance about the position you hold and what your job entails. One of the things that he said is you can't force someone to change. And while that's true enough, I do think that you can do everything in your power as a CO to ensure that clear and consistent messages are sent.
As a prison guard.
Right. And that standards are maintained, and that's not at all what goes on in here. Another thing.
Well, yeah, but it's much bigger than the guards. It's the whole system. The guards are the tip of the finger that touches on a daily basis prisoners, but they are carrying out in the way the things that the system tells them to carry out, and they are whatever is happening at the street level of any organization, that is, at the prison guard level, is the organization. That's the culture that lives from top to bottom within the organization. And what you're saying is, well, I think you're right about his point. He was saying it's hopeless. Look, these are prisoners. These are people from bad backgrounds. These are people who are criminals. He was... I think saying that as a prison guard, as a professional worker inside of this organization has given me no reason to think from the point of view of, yes, we can rehabilitate some people here, whatever the percentage is, maybe we can rehabilitate 5%. Isn't that our most important goal, to rehabilitate those 5%? And that's how I would look at it. After we provide security to the people on the other side of the walls, which is the job one, is to incarcerate people who need incarceration. But it seems to me, Brent, that the second part is then, how do we make this system one that changes the reality when these people hit the streets again, as most of them will do, rather than perpetuate the reality of the bad things that they did and the bad things they feel about themselves.
Sure. And I think that part of the problem is that we, as a society, continue to absolve the individuals that make up a culture for the nature of that culture. Now, Mike and I buck the culture in here as much as is possible without ending up in, restrictive housing. So, you know, I'm not a very popular guy in prison simply because I take positions that aren't widely accepted, both
like
by
what?
The staff. Well, you know, if you want to talk about the fallout from writing the book Down the Rabbit Hole, you know, there were staff members who were actively trying to get me hurt, and potentially Mike Leibowitz hurt as well, and there were inmates who were none too happy that, you know, they were losing money because work was being canceled because the staff members didn't want me there. So I was surrounded by enemies, essentially. And that's ultimately what happens when you begin to buck this culture, is they suppress
So what you're saying is, in response to you sharing your ideas about how the prison could be better run, or associated ideas that might cause disruption, the response of the system is to try to crush you or to have you physically harmed or your life upset in some way.
Absolutely. And that's the nature of the beast, I guess. But that hasn't deterred me from continuing down that path, because I think so long as we're accepting of the negligence of the individuals who make up that culture, we're never going to actually change that culture. So I still say that it falls on individual officers. You know, we have a rule in here. The rules are essentially governed by a codification called the administrative directives. And the administrative directives say that officers must intervene when they see, you know, X, Y, and Z happening. You know, excessive uses of force, you know, language that's abusive by another officer, so on and so forth. And I can count on one finger, essentially, how many times I've actually seen an officer intervene in any situation that's listed in the directives. So these are guys that are just interested in you know, flying under the radar and not making waves. And, you know, their allegiance is not to the public. Their allegiance is to the system itself. The system is designed simply to maintain itself. And anybody who interferes with that is going to suffer consequences.
Yes, but you could have loyalty to the system. You should have loyalty to the system that included that the system behave with integrity. And that's the key element that's left out here. And one of the demonstrations that we've gotten during the COVID era of the fact that there is no integrity inside of the Department of Corrections, and I would posit then as a result that proves there is no integrity in government at all, because the whole government protects each part of itself, just as there is no sign that, say, Ned Lamont, for example, as a new governor, has come into office and in any way in his year and a half in office investigated, come to understand, or cause any changes to take place in the operation of the department. Now, that represents negligence on my part. There should be, each governor coming in should be coming to know the different pieces of the organism and affecting change in every part. Otherwise, he's not confessing to the truth that government is a disease unto itself that needs mending, that needs healing.
Absolutely. And, you know, that should be the approach, you know, all the way across the spectrum. Every employee should approach their job in a way. Every government employee should approach their job in a way as a private employee does, and you know, in terms of having to produce something, you know, tangible and measurable that's beneficial, in this case, beneficial to the taxpayers. You know, my life would be much easier if I would just shut up and sit down somewhere and not continue to put myself out there. But that I'm just not willing to do that. And we need corrections officers to begin to do the same thing. You know, one thing that I never hear on your show, and I'm sure corrections officers listen to the show, is calling up even anonymously and saying, yes, those guys are telling the truth. This thing is a complete mess, and we need to begin to fix it. Because the reality is that, you know, people's lives are affected. You know, when you say 84% or 83% of offenders get out and reoffend within 9 years of release, you know, it's a pretty abstract thing. But, you know, behind that statement are real people's lives being damaged, you know, and infected in very profound ways, and in some cases, many cases, ended permanently. And so we don't really take this as seriously as we should. I mean, nobody would ever hire a carpenter who doesn't know the difference between a ridge beam and a sill plate. But we readily hire corrections officers that don't know the first thing about criminal psychology, have never read anything about the
research. You have 1 minute left.
The research that suggests that you can achieve, reductions in recidivism. And I'll have to call you back.
Yeah, call us back, Brent McCall, so we can continue this conversation. Always fascinating. And thank you. We'll talk to you in a minute.
All right.
The caller has hung up.
Continuing our conversation with Brent, who has called back in after being cut off by the 15-minute maximum on each phone call. Brent, I think the thing that I've learned most about prison that confirms all my bad views about the Department of Corrections and also government in general is that during the COVID thing, there have been a lot of instructions to the prison, as in signs or public statements from the commissioner of the Department of Corrections about things they were doing that totally contradicted the reality. A sign goes up, it says this procedure will be followed, and while that sign is, from the moment it's posted, people are ignoring what's on the sign. It never becomes an actual policy. And what was driven home really quickly, and I guess the most glaring, was the failure to properly guard prisoners from exposure to other prisoners who had been exposed to somebody who was contagious with COVID. So somebody gets exposed to a COVID patient, or a whole block gets exposed to a COVID patient. Those prisoners are allowed to go out into the general population. And then maybe a couple days later, maybe they're put on quarantine or something. You know, just such negligence that would not be permitted in the rest of the world.
Yeah, one of the things that struck me about the Department of Corrections response to COVID was, you know, they look at everything through the lens of punishment. So, the guys that were testing positive for COVID were essentially being dealt with as if they had committed a serious violation of the rules. They were essentially cuffed up and taken to the segregation unit. And, you know, the whole thing was completely punitive. They were losing their property, and the list goes on. And you know, the Department of Corrections, from what I understand now, has finally woken up to this, that this is not, if you catch COVID, it's not really your fault, per se, especially not in prison where it's impossible to social distance, where, you know, the system is just not designed to take certain precautions or personal protections related to that. So, you know, they were shipping them to the state's supermax prison and putting them in quarantine, and guys were hiding their symptoms because they were afraid to be punished rather than being treated as if, okay, this guy has a disease, he needs some help, he's got infected with a virus. The whole thing was punitive, and to some extent it still continues to be punitive from what I understand. And I think that it's sort of indicative of just how they view every issue in corrections. It's just punish, 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 punish. And punishment is important, don't get me wrong. Retribution has a role to play in any system, because, you know, you need to create a certain level of discomfort in the offender to try to prompt him to begin to assess how he's living. So I'm not saying criminals shouldn't be punished. I'm saying that the Department of Corrections needs to be very careful about sending appropriate messages about what behavior deserves to be punished and what behavior shouldn't be punished so that the offender can understand the difference. Most of these guys, myself included, are just punished for something somebody said, for instance, or I'll give you an example. And this may be a little far afield, I don't know. But recently, my daughter mm-hmm. sent me a picture that my granddaughter had drew and colored in with colored pencils or magic marker or crayon or something. I wasn't able to get the picture. The picture violates the rules of the institution because of, I guess, the wax in the crayon. So, you know, without the least bit of information suggesting that there was drugs in this or any of that, I had to watch the unit manager who gave me the letter, but I watched him put my granddaughter's picture into a paper shredder. And I was just like, what? You know, they pay lip service to this idea that you want to, you know, foster family bonds, and you know, because the evidence suggests that offenders do better when they get out if they have some support system. But the mm-hmm. reality is the policies don't allow that. You know, they don't need probable cause. They don't need any suspicion. It's just they create a policy, and then you're not allowed these things. So I don't know why, you know, that level of punishment is necessary. Like, it, you know, my granddaughter.
What was the context of him shredding the picture in front of you? Did he show it to you so you could see it before he shredded it?
No. Oftentimes, when they want to deny a piece of mail or a book or something like this, they'll call you out and essentially plea bargain with you and say, if you don't contest, you know, appeal this issue, we'll let you have this piece, but we're not going to let you have this piece. So it's a way, I guess, of just curtailing the grievance procedure. So inmates aren't grieving or complaining about, mm-hmm. you know, that they can't have these items. But there's no indication that my daughter is a drug addict or that my daughter would try to sneak me in drugs. I've never had a drug charge while in prison. I've never had a dirty urine. You understand? There's no responsivity to individual offenders.
Yes, but if he was, I'm looking for some sign of humanity. And I think along the lines of what you're saying, if you want prisoners to get out and act like human beings, you have to teach them how to behave like human beings. And the human thing to do, if you've received a picture from your grandchild that you can't actually be given, like, say the prison actually feels compelled to follow that rule and not let you keep the picture and bring it back to your cell. Well, at least they could show it to you and let you hold it for a moment and look at it. They could put it inside of a piece of plastic. They could make a photocopy of it and show you the photocopy. There's all kinds of ways that if they wanted to indicate that showing humanity was something that they valued in terms of rehabilitation and cutting down recidivism, they could have shown the humanity, and they could say, look, Brent, I'm sorry I'm not allowed to give this to you, but have a look at it, and then we've got to shred it.
Instead, they're
given nothing. Go ahead.
I would push back on that a little bit, Todd, and say that just allowing me to see the picture for a second would be a certain level of cruelty in itself. But the idea of a photocopy, of a color photocopy, is not unreasonable. The inherent problem in your logic is that trying to reason with these people is nearly impossible. They're almost immune to reasoning.
I'm not suggesting that anyone reason with them. I'm just saying it's evidence of a diseased system.
Oh, absolutely. If I was to recommend to the captain what you just said in terms of color photocopies for those items, it would just be dismissed. You know, there's an aspect of corrections that just is about learned helplessness. is that, you know, you want these guys to get out and be more rational human beings, but then you do not demonstrate that reasoning has any value. And I write about this quite a bit in the new book that I wrote that hopefully will be published soon. And if you, you know, nobody should be surprised if you spend 15 years in prison being delivered implicit messages that reasoning does not work, that's not what offenders resort to when they get out, because they have no practice. It hasn't benefited them in any way. Reasoning is just, you know, a little parlor game they play in programming, assuming you even have...
Programming being in classes, you mean?
Right, in classes. Assuming you even have an instructor that cares enough to engage that much, which is often not the case. So, you know,
all right, Brent, we've got to wrap up. Any closing thoughts for us on this?
Yeah, I think that, you know, more important than whether the Department of Corrections has programming and, you know, policies that make sense is whether they're implemented and what philosophy is allowed to prevail. And currently, the philosophy that prevails is toxic to everybody involved.
That's it for this hour of After Six. I'm Todd Feinberg. Don't forget, call that rant line, 860-751-4698. I'll see you tomorrow at 3 on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.